Rock out is Stone Cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellscape submission. Oh, my God. What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, the Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE podcast on this Friday, September 24th, as we are just 2 days away from Extreme Rules, a pay-per-view that really does not feel a whole lot like a pay-per-view. Am I right? I don't know about you, but it sure as hell is feeling these days that aside from the Big Four and maybe Money in the Bank, sprinkle in perhaps an Elimination Chamber in there, a lot of these B pay-per-views really do not feel all that important anymore. Let's say like Backlash and TLC, even Hell in a Cell, Extreme Rules. They really just feel like afterthoughts, and it's kind of a sad landscape right now in the WWE, as it is clear that they're just doing everything in their power to just boost ratings on Raw and SmackDown and burning through pay-per-view level matches in the process. Like, New Day versus The Bloodline, that's surely a pay-per-view quality match. You have Roman Reigns in a triple threat match on Monday Night Raw against Big E and Lashley. That could probably headline a WrestleMania, to be honest with you. But that's neither here nor there. You guys are not here for that. You are here for rivalries. And carrying on a theme from the last couple weeks, we are going back to late 2002, early 2003 for Scott Steiner versus Triple H that lasted just about 2 months in the winter of 2003. And I've been talking about this time period a lot lately. And I think it's a very polarizing time period in the history of the WWE, in large part because of how much the company was in transition at this point. And when you lose two guys in the likes of The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin on full-time basis, like they did in the summer of 2002, it really throws all of your plans into a blender. And I remember on one of the episodes of the Ruthless Aggression series that I really hope they revisit and expand on, but that originally came out, I believe, in the spring of 2020, Bruce Pritchard really said, like, what are you supposed to do when the two biggest stars in the company, arguably in the history of the business, walk out on you at virtually the same time? You know, there was Austin who walked out in June of 2002. The Rock put Brock Lesnar over at SummerSlam in August of 2002 and proceeded to go on to Hollywood. And it really left WWE in a pickle. And what they did in this time was also split the roster into two brands. And you sent the World Heavyweight Championship, or the newly rechristened World Heavyweight Championship, to Monday Night Raw, and the WWE Championship, or then known as the Undisputed Championship, over to SmackDown. And as I talked about last week with Brock and The Big Show, SmackDown really got a lot of established stars right out of the gate of the brand split. Like, the first overall draft pick was The Rock. Obviously, he didn't last there all too long because of his commitments to Hollywood. Then you had Kurt Angle go over there, and you can make the case he was the best worker in the company at the time. Following SummerSlam, you had Brock Lesnar, the next big thing, the fastest rising star in the company, become exclusive to SmackDown. The Undertaker moved over to SmackDown after originally being drafted to Raw. Ditto for The Big Show. You had guys, veterans like Rikishi over there, Chris Benoit, Edge, Eddie Guerrero. SmackDown was a very stacked brand, especially in terms of in-ring. And the proof was in the pudding, right? Like, look at all the guys I just named, like the best workers in the business. You look over onto Monday Night Raw, and Raw had some good players as well. You had Chris Jericho, who was really coming off of a great year in 2001, early 2002, the first ever Undisputed Champion, And right around this time that I'm talking about, he started fast-tracking to a program with HBK, and maybe we'll get to that in a future show. You had Christian, who was an established lower mid-card guy, really good tag team competitor. The Dudley Boys rejoined at Survivor Series in 2002. Kane, Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy, although this was probably the low point of Jeff Hardy's career. But in terms of main event players, there were few and far between on Monday Night Raw. And that really left Triple H. Triple H was the only quote-unquote guy that you could go with as a credible world champion. You had Shawn Michaels, who had a cup of coffee with the belt between Survivor Series and Armageddon in 2002. But even at that, Shawn Michaels was just coming back from a five-year hiatus. How realistic would it be for him to be a long-term world champion after being away for half of a decade? And we know behind the scenes, Shawn Michaels was not really interested in once again carrying the company as the main guy and being the world champion. So you had Triple H, and he started off with kind of a program with Ric Flair, defeated Ric Flair on an episode of Monday Night Raw in the fall of 2002, and quickly joined forces with Ric Flair. And Ric Flair became his manager as kind of the prior faction before we got to Evolution. And Evolution's going to play a part in this show as well. And then you get to Survivor Series for the first ever Elimination Chamber, where you have Triple H defending the World Championship against Rob Van Dam, Kane, Booker T, Chris Jericho, and Shawn Michaels. As we all know, Shawn Michaels goes on to win and builds to a Three Stages of Hell match against Triple H at the following pay-per-view in Armageddon. As I previously said, Shawn Michaels loses the belt, and once again, Triple H is the World Heavyweight Champion. Now, this is the third time in a span of just about 8 months that Triple H is one of the world champions. He won the Undisputed Championship at WrestleMania that year. Then he was awarded the newly debuted World Heavyweight Championship by Eric Bischoff. And then he regains it in December to make himself a three-time world champion in the span of 8 or 9 months. The following night on Monday Night Raw, we get a Triple H appreciation night by Eric Bischoff in classic heel managerial fashion, where he is going to just give a great welcome for the newly recrowned champion in Triple H. But also that night was the debut of Scott Steiner, a newly signed acquisition, a big name from WCW. And at this point, I don't know if you guys remember, there was Chief Morley, aka Val Venus, who was the chief of staff to Eric Bischoff. They kind of get their wires crossed. Morley promises Steiner the main event slot to sign his new contract. Triple H is promised the main event slot for his appreciation night by Bischoff. And essentially, we have them slide Steiner out of that position to give Triple H his night of shine. But on Scott Steiner's first night on Monday Night Raw, he was not going to go silenced.
Thank you. Well, actually, I guess I shouldn't be thanking you. You should be thanking me, shouldn't you?
As we should, yes.
I don't know. Maybe I should try to be a little more humble, but God knows it's hard to be humble when you're Triple H. It's hard to be humble when you're this good.
This damn good.
And quite frankly, I'm not just good. I am the best. And I prove it again and again and again. And last night was no different. You see, you can name anyone in this industry, anyone today, and I've beaten them all. Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, Kane, Kurt Angle. Hell, I've even beaten phenoms like The Undertaker. Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I've even beaten The Rock. That's right, Hollywood. I beat your ass. You know why you're making movies. And the fact is, hell, now that I think about it, I even retired the hardcore legend, Mick Foley.
That's true.
The fact is, you can line them all up, and I will beat them all. Because I am exactly what I say I am, and that is the best. Because I am the game. And whether anybody likes it or doesn't like it, I am that damn good.
Oh, no. Oh, wait a second. The man that's that damn good has just been interrupted by Big Papa Pump, who has promised to make this a memorable moment for the New World's Heavyweight Champion.
So after Triple H gives down the laundry list of names that he's defeated over the years, he's interrupted by Scott Steiner. And Steiner, who is just a terrible, 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 terrible promo, one of the reasons why I'm not really going to play it is because of how bad he is, comes out and says, "Well, you haven't beaten me." And it's kind of a telltale sign of the talent or lack thereof that WWE had at their disposal at this point in time, that they bring out Scott Steiner to kind of match up to Triple H after beating all the names he just mentioned. Like, he says he beat The Rock, he beat Austin, he beat Kurt Angle, he beat Taker, and then Steiner comes out and tries to say, like, "Well, I'm just as good as or better than those guys." And it was just, it felt forced from the very, very, very beginning. And I guess that's the entire theme of this particular rivalry, is that it's infamous because it's not remembered for the right reasons. And it was just such a forced, forced rivalry, kind of out of necessity by WWE. And this was the preceding rivalry to Booker T and Triple H, which also felt forced. Now, obviously, Booker T had a lot more crowd support behind him, and there was a want for Booker T to become the champion, and he didn't just show up and insert himself in the main event out of midair. He was on the grind, he was working, the crowd was behind him, so it wasn't completely apples to apples, but that being said, it still was forced. But this one was Steiner just showing up, first time in the WWE for, I want to say, 10 years. And to be honest, maybe he was a massive star in WCW. I'm not very privy to what was going on in WCW. I know he was part of the NWO, but I can't really speak to just how big of a star Scott Steiner was in the late 90s with WCW. But obviously, WWE felt, and maybe Eric Bischoff had a hand in this, as he was the general manager at the time, although I don't think he really had a hand in creative. I guess they felt that he was better than any other option that they had. And they start building for Scott Steiner versus Triple H, and almost right out of the gate, he is given a World Heavyweight Championship match at the Royal Rumble in the main event, or the Raw main event, obviously, before the actual Rumble. And they go on to build this program based on Scott Steiner's muscles. That's pretty much the depth of where this went. And, I mean, you had anything from an arm wrestling contest to a posing contest to a bench press competition. And to be honest, it really just felt completely shallow. It felt like something that was forced, and it is very rare, or it was very rare at this time in WWE, for something to feel so apparently forced on screen. And that's what this felt like, to be honest with you. And for them to really only try and get our attention into this program by having us care about Scott Steiner being able to beat Triple H in an arm wrestling contest or look better while posing, it really kind of tells you where they were, even themselves, with this rivalry. It never felt as though Scott Steiner had a chance to get this, like to win the championship off of Triple H. And the proof was in the pudding in terms of the storytelling. And there was a promo in the Go Home episode to the Rumble that Triple H cut on Steiner. And you're supposed to hate Triple H, right? He was an overwhelming heel at this point. You were supposed to be getting behind Scott Steiner. And again, I can't really speak to what he did in WCW, easy enough for me to say. But everyone that is more privy to that information has told me that he should have never come in as a babyface in WWE. And I think that they were right based on everything that I watched, reviewing it before I started recording the show. It was just something that was doomed to fail from the outset, heavily because of creative. But as we see with Goldberg nowadays, and there's other options as well, when you come out of nowhere and insert yourself into the main event and automatically get a title shot just based on merit, it doesn't typically go over all too well with the fans. And it doesn't seem all that believable. And look how quickly they turned on Goldberg. And there is a difference. It is an apples to apples because Goldberg was an established mega babyface. He was completely over with the crowd in the late 90s with WCW, even during his run with WWE in 2003. But even at that, you have a guy like Goldberg show back up in 2017 and 2019 and just put himself in a world championship match, win the title on two of those occasions. It's not going to really jive with the fan base because you want to see a guy that's there all the time that works for it. Look at The Rock. You know, he was arguably the most over guy in the company in the early 2000s, especially after Stone Cold Steve Austin turned heel. And even him, when he started dipping his toe into Hollywood, he wasn't coming back all the time. The crowd turned on him. They don't want a guy who just shows up whenever he wants and gets something right out of the gate. And the other thing is that Scott Steiner didn't even have a match on Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania, before Royal Rumble, that is. You waltz into Monday Night Raw one day, you sign a contract, and basically get appointed into the main event at the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. And, you know, I'm sure some people like this. When I was watching it live, I was younger, so I didn't really think about it in this much depth. But watching it back, it's very kind of, it's dumbfounding in a way that they chose to go down this road with Scott Steiner. But getting back to that promo that Triple H cut on him when they were supposed to do a bench pressing contest, which was just like, you know, like, who cares? And even I remember Scott Steiner, like, trying to show off, like, he tells the guys to rack the weights, like, oh, man, like, let's do 500 pounds to start. It's just like, that's not very becoming of a babyface. You know, I work out here and there, or, like, I try and work out 3-4 times a week, and I'm not Scott Steiner by any means, but even guys who are in very, very good shape, if you're doing more than 225, like, that's considered something. I believe that's the weight they use for the combine in the NFL to see how many reps you could do of 225, two plates. And for them to pretty much, like, book Scott Steiner to, like, kind of, like, chuckle away and be like, yeah, like, we'll start with 500 pounds and then we'll go from there. It was just like, well, who the hell does this guy think he is? And that's saying something because you could not get more heelish than Triple H at this time. And for you to be kind of siding with Triple H tells you just how bad of a job that they were doing booking Scott Steiner as a babyface. And especially when you needed a babyface oh so bad on this Raw brand to step up to Triple H. So before they even get to doing the bench pressing contest, Triple H walks to the ring in a suit. So it's clear that he's not going to entertain this. And he cuts a promo on Scott Steiner that's supposed to get him real heel heat, But in reality, he just said a whole lot of truth.
With one goal in mind.
Let me explain something to you, Steiner. I don't give a crap about bench pressing. I don't give a crap about arm wrestling. I don't care about pose downs. You see, I've been playing games with you for a couple of weeks, just stringing you along, having a good time, laughing. The fact is, I don't give a care about any of that stuff. What I care about is sitting right on my shoulder. It's the World Heavyweight Championship. It says that beyond a shadow of a doubt, I am the best. Not at arm wrestling, not at posing, not at bench pressing, but at wrestling. In this ring, in this world, I am the best that there is. Now, I've heard you talking and you think you're the guy, right? You think you're the guy that's got my number. You're the one that can knock me off the top of that perch, sitting up high. Well, let me ask you this. You think you're the first one? Because there's been a whole long list of guys before you that thought they were the guy too. That thought they were the man. Hogan, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, The Rock, Austin. They all thought at one time or another that they were the guy that could knock me off the top of the mountain. But yet here I stand in the center of this ring, still the World Heavyweight Champion. Not them, me. You see, it's real easy to say you're the best. This proves it. Now, what makes you think you're different than anybody else, huh? Nothing. Nothing. You are the same as they are. You will talk a good talk until we get to the Rumble. And this Sunday, I will do what I always do. I will make an example of you in front of the whole world. I will prove to you that I am the man and that I am everything that I say I am. That I am the best. That I am the World Heavyweight Champion. And that I am the game. And that I am that damn good.
Like, what was wrong about what Triple H said there, honestly? And that's what you kind of get to here is that, and he was even giving Steiner too much credit at this point because he wasn't just as good as the other guys. There was a huge difference between him and Rock and Austin and Taker and Angle. It was because he was worse. He was never a world champion in the WWF, I don't think. And if he was in WCW, he certainly wasn't one of the major ones. You know, he wasn't regarded as Goldberg or Sting or Hogan or Nash. He wasn't one of those guys. Like, I said several times during this podcast, I'm not very privy to the WCW landscape and what went on in the late 90s, but I can tell you with certainty that Scott Steiner was not one of the faces of that product. And Triple H, maybe he wasn't the top guy and played kind of third fiddle to Rock and Austin, but in my mind, he certainly was the biggest heel at that time. You can make the case that he's the best heel of all time, and you can make the case that at this point in the WWE, in the winter of 2003, with The Rock on hiatus, with Austin nowhere to be found, he was the best in the business, and to use his own slogan, he was that damn good. And it was like, you're trying to build up Scott Steiner to be this guy to finally dethrone Triple H. Like, oh, he's going to be the guy. And you watch and you're just like, why? Why would it be Scott Steiner? You know, like Scott Steiner is going to be like this mega monster that Triple H can't stop. Anyway, they get to Royal Rumble, and Triple H is kind of trying to get disqualified or counted out the entire match. They're really booking Scott Steiner to be a beast, although he is a terrible, terrible worker. And eventually, Triple H gets disqualified by hitting him with the sledgehammer. So you know that there will be a second installment of this contest. The following night on Monday Night Raw, we see him go, Steiner, go one-on-one with Batista, who was being managed by by Ric Flair at the time, but was keeping his distance from Triple H. And this is probably the only positive outcome from this program, is that Evolution was born through the rivalry of Triple H and Scott Steiner. Because the following night on Monday Night Raw, you have Scott Steiner kind of bully around Randy Orton in the back, who at this time was doing his road back from recovering from a shoulder injury, and he would do his news briefs like, oh, I'm 94% better, I'm 95% better. And then during Steiner's match with Batista, Orton gets involved. And everyone was dumbfounded, like, what's Randy Orton doing in the ring? What does he have to do with anything? And then Ric Flair gets involved, and Batista gets involved, and Triple H runs down. And before you know it, you have what would eventually become Evolution beating the holy hell out of Scott Steiner in the middle of the ring. And a week or two later, we get the official formation of arguably the best faction in the history of WWE, of Evolution, with Batista and Orton and Flair and Triple H. And through all the garbage and the bad booking and just the lack of interest in this angle and this rivalry, we got Evolution. And that's what was the most important thing of this rivalry. It wasn't Triple H, you know, beating Steiner to cement his legacy as the true best champion of this time or the face of the company. It wasn't to legitimize Scott Steiner as a main event level babyface, or let alone a main event level contender or talent. It was because we got Evolution. Because we went on to see Evolution run roughshod on WWE for the preceding year and a half, 2 years. And what a ride they took us on. And it started against Scott Steiner. But before we could get to Evolution's rise to glory, we had to go through the final installment of Steiner versus Triple H at No Way Out 2003 in my hometown of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, at the Bell Center. And this was an absolutely stacked card. Like, to be honest, this could probably be a WrestleMania. Well, maybe not a WrestleMania, but this was a stack card nonetheless. You had The Undertaker versus The Big Show. You had Hulk Hogan versus The Rock. You had a returning Stone Cold Steve Austin. And then you had Triple H versus Scott Steiner for the World Heavyweight Championship. But lo and behold, and thankfully, this time it wouldn't be a disqualification finish. Triple H would get the outcome that he so desperately desired. And look, you heard it in the crowd there that they were happy that Triple H retained the championship. Like, you heard the cheer, the uproar, and the boo when Steiner kicked out of the initial the pinfall attempt by Triple H, because he hits him with the championship while Orton and Flair and Batista are distracting the ref on the outside. And then they think it's over. One, two, and then Steiner kicks out, who's the babyface, and people are booing. And that pretty much tells you all you need to know about how everyone thought about this program. And then when he finally gets the pinfall after the pedigree, the crowd uproars. And, you know, I understand that this was kind of just a stepping stone for Triple H. And, you know, Matt and I kind of talked about this when we reviewed what if Booker T won the world championship at WrestleMania 19. And when I reviewed Booker T versus Triple H a few weeks ago, and I said that Booker T was also a stepping stone, Steiner was as well. And it was a lot of stepping stones for Triple H until he got to the eventual destination. And to be honest, it was really Goldberg. It really took until Goldberg showed up for them to find a true top-level main event babyface to challenge Triple H and be legitimate enough to win the World Heavyweight Championship, a rivalry I have previously covered. And, you know, he ends up carrying this World Heavyweight Championship all the way till September at Armageddon in 2003. As for Scott Steiner, he wasn't even on WrestleMania. It's crazy to think that you could go from challenging for the World Championship on back-to-back pay-per-views, and then at the following one, the biggest pay-per-view of the year, you're not even on the card. I cannot remember, aside from his two pay-per-view matches against Triple H at the Rumble and No Way Out, I cannot remember a big one-on-one match that Scott Steiner had at a pay-per-view. To be honest with you, I can. The only other pay-per-view match that he had that I could say off the top of my head was when he was on Team Bischoff at Survivor Series in 2003 against Team Stone Cold Steve Austin. And even at that, I think he was the first guy eliminated for Team Bischoff. And I believe he was out of the company by 2004. So, I mean, in closing, this was probably one of the most flopped debuts in WWE, the worst attempts at trying to fast track a guy to the main event. And I understand it was out of necessity. They didn't have anyone else to step up to Triple H at this time. I get that. But it really was just a bad angle through and through. But like I said earlier, we got Evolution out of it. And we all know what Evolution went on to do as a faction and then separately. You know, Randy Orton, one of the best competitors of all time. Batista became one of the best baby faces from 2005 to 2008. And in my opinion, it truly and finally legitimized Triple H as an elite superstar and talent. Because I know everyone calls it, you know, the reign of terror of Triple H. And in a lot of ways it was. But he really carried the WWE on his back, more specifically Monday Night Raw, all the way until 2005 while they were waiting for true breakout stars. And, you know, you had Goldberg show up for a bit. You had Chris Benoit have a nice run with the world title in 2004. But it really was not until Batista and John Cena completely broke out in 2005 that we finally got to see Triple H kind of take a backseat. And agree with it, disagree with it, I think it was the right call. You know, I agree that Triple H should have held this title for as long as he did and how often he did. But even if you think he should have dropped it somewhere along the line, it certainly was not to Scott Steiner. But anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed Steiner versus Triple H, because that's all I got for you today. But as always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can get Matt on Twitter at Wrestling_audio. Or you can email him at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can catch our What If show every Monday night. But it probably drops on Tuesdays. But anyway, guys, take it easy, and I'll talk to you next time.